Chapter 3. The observatory had been built in the northeast reaches of the Imperial Palace. Its domed roof was lined with turquoise mosaic tiles, shining in the light of 100 candles. Esoteric devices on the curved surfaces sparkled and moved with the soft play of shadow. It was not easy to see what was picked out by those designs. Astrological symbols, perhaps, or maybe mythical beasts from a forgotten age of terror. At the very summit was shadow, a lacuna out of the reach of the candlelight. A face had been created there a long time ago, but the detail could no longer be made out. It sat in the darkness, gazing featurelessly down on the floor below. The observatory had not been used to scry the stars for a long time. Ancient brass telescopes, orreries and astrariums cluttered the aisles, unused, most of them covered in heavy tarpaulins. Rosewood cabinets were locked. The dust on the bookcases was a finger-width thick. The floor was marble, a checkerboard of ivory and sable, and the walls around it glittered with faded gilt. 20 pillars sustained the dome above, each with a stone emblem carved into the capital. Some were illuminated clearly, a wolf, a serpent, a lion. Others were obscured. 3 lords stood in the centre. 2 were titans, their huge frames enclosed in extravagant shells of armour. The 3rd was hunched and frail. For a long time they did not say a word. Their silence seemed immense in that place. It seemed as if the first one to speak might shatter the walls and bring the dome down upon them. The first to break the calm was the tallest, and the most physically imposing. His face was slabbed and hard, crowned with a shock of white hair cropped close to the skull. His golden battle plate looked as solid as the stonework around it. Its owner might just as well have been one of its statues. A thick cloak hung from his shoulders, pooling darkly in the flickering half-light.
"Anything?" he asked.
The speaker had many names. From his origins on the ice world of Inwit, he had been Rogel Dorn. Later, he was the Primarch of the Imperial Fists. In recent times, he had slowly become accustomed to being the Emperor's chosen Praetorian. His voice had the timbre of a hammer thudding into timber. It was the voice of a man who desired nothing more than to man his ships, to rally his legion, and head into the void to face the enemy that he knew was coming. And yet, that was the one thing, the only thing, that he had been expressly forbidden to do. It was a strange burden, to be condemned by one's own expertise.
"The Sigilite has not spoken," answered the second figure.
This one was scarcely less imposing. His armour had the same baroque quality the observatory had, decorated with the phases of moons and symbols of what might have once been called the occult. Like Dawn, he was clad in gold and bronze and enveloped in rich fabrics of crimson. And yet where Dawn seemed as solid as the bedrock upon which the observatory rested, this one seemed somehow more ephemeral, more liable to burst into sudden movement. Words of power had been painstakingly engraved into his elaborate battleplate, ancient words, in characters so small that they might have been the near silent whispers of spectres. This man's full name was so long that it could not be contained on a single sheet of bronze. He most commonly answered to a single version of it, Constantine Valdor, Captain General of the Legio Custodes. When he spoke, his voice was surprisingly quiet. His eyes, though, were never quite still, flickering almost imperceptibly, forever searching for the next threat to be countered.
"No, I have not," said the third. "I am struggling to find something to say that has not already been said."
Malkador the Sigilite had none of the grandeur of his companions. His robes, though richly made, were simple. The staff he leaned upon looked to be made of little more than iron, though the Aquila device that topped it was artful. His voice gave away his physical weakness. It sounded destroyed by age. None, save perhaps the Emperor himself, knew just how old he was. He had no known birthplace, no cultural identity. As far as the wider Imperium was concerned, he had just always been there, as solid a presence as the palace itself. Malkador and the Emperor. The Emperor and Malkador. They were like light and dark, sun and moon, each as inscrutable and unknowable as the other. Except that the Emperor was gone. Locked away in the deep throne chambers, his unmatched power deployed to an end that even the Lords of Terror did not speak of openly.
"Then let me tell you again," said Dorne. "Perhaps you have forgotten where it is that we stand. Magnus has broken the wards around the throne, and now this, the mightiest fortress in the galaxy, sits upon a foundation of madness."
"It is contained once more," insisted Malkador, "for now the world knows little of the actual truth."
"It is contained only because the Emperor binds himself to the Hidden War," Dorne replied. "This respite has been bought with the sacrifice of 1,000 souls. That is why the world does not know."
"Not yet," said Valdor bleakly. "But they will. Perhaps a few more weeks, perhaps months, but it will spill out eventually. Rumours are already running wild."
"It will do," agreed Malkador. "But as long as he holds firm..."
"Yes, as long as he holds firm," said Dorne bitterly. "That is what we are reduced to. No actions, no movement, just hope."
"We cannot help him," said Valdor. "We know this, so let us turn to what we can do."
Malkador chuckled dryly.
"I never asked you how it felt, Constantine, to see Prospero burn. Did even your callous soul blanch at that?"
Valdor didn't miss a beat.
"No, it was necessary."
"Was it?"
sighed Malkador.
"I did not give the order. I wanted Magnus censured, not destroyed. What was it that made Russ do it? You never could give me an answer."
Dorne exhaled impatiently.
"You know all of this, Malkador. You know all that happened there just as we do."
He was coldly furious.
"Does this need repeating? The War Master is at the heart of it, poisoning everything we do. And now he has the blood of 3 more legions on his hands."
At that, Malkador seemed to wince. The slaughter of Istvan V was still raw. None of them, save the implacable Valdor perhaps, could refer to it without provoking that hollow, draining sense of loss.
"Ferus is truly gone, they tell me,"
admitted Malkador.
"Vulcan and Korax missing. 8 legions declared traitor, even now carving the void apart to get to us."
He smiled grimly.
"Shall I go on? The ether in turmoil, blighting the Astronomicon and making us blind. No word of Gilliman or Sanguinius. Are they with us? Or have they also turned?"
"Not the Angel," said Dorne firmly. "And I will not believe it of Rebute."
"But they are lost to us. For now, at least," said Valdor. "So we must survey what we know. Russ is at Alexis. When I left him, they were badly mauled, for the Suns gave us a hard fight. But they will hunt again."
"And the Lion?"
said Malkador.
"What of him?"
"He pursues his private feuds," said Dorne. "And when has he ever been anything but his own master?"
Malkador smiled.
you brothers. Such a nest of rivalries. I warned him to make you sisters, that it would make things more civilized. He thought I was joking. I wasn't.
Dawn didn't smile. His face seemed permanently rooted in a kind of frozen tension.
There is one other, said Valdor quietly.
Ah, yes, said Malkador. So easy to overlook the Khan. Why is that?
It is his gift, said Dawn dismissively.
The Khan was in the Chondak system, said Valdor.
Which, like so many others, is beyond our reach, said Malkador,
his voice bleakly humorous.
What of Jagatai's loyalty? Asked Valdor.
I did not know him, not well, said Dawn.
None of us did, said Malkador. That was the point of him. In any system there needs to be uncertainty.
He smiled at Dawn.
You, my friend, were an exercise in the opposite. No wonder you two did not understand one another.
So who was he close to? Asked Valdor.
Malkador thought for a moment.
Horus, of course. They were so similar. I believe they conferred on Ulanor.
Magnus, too, said Dawn, somewhat hesitantly. They fought alongside one another for a long time.
Yes,
said Malkador, nodding pensively.
The Librarius, the Khan, Magnus, and Sanguinius were behind it. That was the root of their connection, such as it was. They all believed in the need for psychers within the legions.
Valdor took a deep breath.
So, there it is. The Khan's known allies, Horus and Magnus. Traitors, both.
All of us trusted Horus, said Dawn.
Quite,
said Malkador ruminatively.
As I said at the time, Nikea was the root of this. We should have explained things better, though there were reasons, some of which we could never disclose, not there.
He pursed his thin lips.
We were too caught up in what needed to be done. That may be the tragedy of it all. We did not explain.
Dawn looked at Malkador coldly, as if he fully agreed. Valdor remained as implacable as ever.
Too late for regrets, said Malkador wearily. We must summon him. Russ and the Khan. Standing here beside you, Rogel, would make me sleep easier. The Executioner and the Warhawk. That would give even Horus pause.
Chondax has gone dark, warned Valdor. But I can instruct the Astropaths to focus their efforts there.
And if he fails to answer? Asked Dawn.
For a moment neither Valdor nor Malkador answered. The space around them seemed to shrink a little.
Then we must assume that Jagatai has fallen too, said the Sigilite at last,
no trace of wry humour left in his voice.
Another name to add to the tally of the lost.
Ilya sat back in her chair after placing the ivory token. Her move had taken her a long time. With so many places to choose from and so many tokens at her disposal, they always did. Her opponent shook his head.
Poor choice.
Really?
She asked, waiting to be shown why.
Yes, he said,
reaching over the large square board to position a black slate counter. She studied the results. They became sobering. He was close to capturing a straggling, kidney-shaped slice of territory, and there was almost certainly nothing she could do about it. The choice, therefore, became simple, to fight the inevitable or carve out some new area of her own elsewhere. It was a choice she had become used to making.
I don't see the possibilities closing. Not in time,
she complained.
That is the skill of it.
But you're getting better. Ilya allowed herself a brief glance at her opponent, checking to see whether he mocked her. As ever, it was hard to tell. Jagatai Khan lounged back in a low-slung seat of furs and leather, limbs loose, his proud face as inscrutable as stone. Ilya remembered when she'd first met him, back above Ulanor. For some reason, she'd nearly fainted, even after Yasugai had warned her about it. It was said that Primarchs sometimes had that effect. The force of their superactive souls strained at the bonds of sense. She'd also heard it said that the human species had never evolved to cope with presentations of such power within simulacra of their own bodies. The effects were well documented. Nausea, lightheadedness, panic. That had all passed now. Spending time with the Primarch hadn't become mundane. It could never become mundane, but it was containable. The flutters of anxiety in her stomach now rarely troubled her. Their conversations had become a trifle less formal. They shared a glass of wine from time to time. They played games.
"Am I really getting better?"
she mused, picking up another ivory stone and pondering where to place it.
"I think you tell me that so you don't lose an opponent."
"Kinja plays."
"Does he ever beat you?"
she asked.
"He's very good."
"I'll take that as a no."
The Primarch's physical presence could be a distraction. It wasn't just the size of him, though there was something inescapably incongruous in addressing a man nearly twice as tall as her. It was more the unconscious splendour. The Khan was lean, rangy, cut harshly like the talons of a hunting bird. He spoke sparingly. When he did, his voice was cultured, tinged with an aristocratic idiom. His face was long and sleek, dark-skinned like all Chogorians, and framed by long black hair. The scar that ran down his left cheek was pronounced, the zigzag of an old wound. Ilya heard that the legionaries had to add poison to the knife cut to get it to scar, for their superhuman flesh otherwise healed too perfectly. He took care over his appearance. His cloak was trimmed with white fur, ermyet, it was called by his fellow Chogorians. He wore a caftan of deep burgundy, lined with silk. Bands of gold sat on his fingers, around his neck, enclosing the topknot of glossy hair. Even out of armour he looked dangerous. The folds of his clothing failed to hide the warrior's training of the body beneath. Every movement he made, whether reaching for more chinua wine or setting his own stones in position, seemed to take place in a refined world of swordsman-like precision. Halji had told her about it many times.
"Nothing is wasted,"
he had said, sweeping his tulwar through the air in front of her to prove the point.
"Every movement as efficient as muscle allows. No flourish, no flare. Just the principle."
The Khan, fittingly enough, seemed to have perfected that.
"Do you wish me to give you a piece of advice?" he asked.
Ilya raised an eyebrow.
"By all means."
He sat back in his oversized chair. The light around them played with the gentle movement of candles. The strains of a Proserpine silver harp sounded faintly in the background. The Khan was very fond of music, an enjoyment he and Magnus shared, so they said.
"You play regicide?" he asked.
Ilya nodded.
"Not as sophisticated as Go," said the Khan. "Regicide gives you one enemy, one trajectory. Kill the emperor, you are the victor. In Go, there is no emperor to kill. Or perhaps it is better to say there are many emperors."
Ilya listened. She thought the White Scars tried too hard to explain the superiority of their cultural preferences. They were so used to being overlooked and ignored. Something of that must have sunk into their psyche somewhere.
"My warriors are trained by this game," the Khan went on. "They learn to see threats from all sides. They learn to counter many targets.
I can see that, said Ilya. Damn it! I struggle to keep everything in my head.
You do very well.
There must be times, though. Times, in reality, when you do have one enemy.
It is easier for a subtle mind to adjust to simplicity.
Again, that edge of defensiveness.
That is because you know you are seen as barbarians.
Ilya sighed and placed her stone. It would probably do little to stem her losses. She expected to be given back handfuls of her counters fairly soon.
So, what is the next target?
The Khan studied the board.
After Chondax? I do not know.
No orders from the War Master?
He did not reply. He hadn't spoken about Horus since the final stages of the conflict on the White World, though before he had often mentioned him. Qin Zha was the same. She knew that they hadn't received any firm news from the War Master whilst on Chondax. She would have seen the logs. But something, perhaps some half-heard star speaker vision, might have eked its way through. It was as if they were all starting at shadowy rumours, fragments of uneasiness that moved through the void like gossip between infantrymen.
So, do you have plans?
Ilya asked, wondering if she would get a clear answer. The Khan stared intently at the stones, not lifting his eyes.
I feel the need to speak to Yesugai again. If we cannot make contact soon, then we will need to make our way home.
Ilya smiled.
Really? You'd bring the whole legion to Chocorus just for him?
The Khan did not smile. Smiling was rare with him, which was odd. The rest of the legion hardly ever stopped.
Of course I would.
He placed his stone, predictably enough beginning the encirclement of another of her dwindling groups.
I have relied on Yesugai for centuries.
Ilya took a sip before moving again. The wine wasn't very good. Chogorians didn't really appreciate viniculture.
So why didn't he come with us to Chondax?
He was needed on Nykaia.
Nykaia?
A summit.
The Khan gave her a shrewd look.
I would have been there too, if I could have been. But Yesugai was my representative. He spoke for me. You see how much I trust him?
I do. What was he doing there?
Arguing for the right of the Zadjin Aga to exist. I hope he was successful.
And if he wasn't?
The Khan shrugged.
It makes no difference to me. But I would prefer that my more assiduous brothers don't have to make a difficult choice.
Ilya smiled. She had come to find the White Scar's amiable indifference to imperial edicts more endearing than exasperating. They weren't rebellious exactly, just themselves. No more, no less. Out alone. Unconcerned. They would never give up the Stormseers.
The ruling could have gone against you months ago, she observed. We would have no idea.
Lots of things may have happened about which we have no idea, said the Khan. That is the advantage of this agreeable place.
But the Primarch's expression faltered for a moment then, as if he knew or perhaps guessed something more than he said.
Do you wish to tell me more?
Ilya asked carefully.
I do not, the Khan replied,
putting his stone down and launching a fresh attack on her beleaguered positions.
Now concentrate. You are nearly dead.
So tell me what you think, said Shiban.
The body of the dead legionary lay in front of him on a slab of steel, rendered in uncomfortable detail by the overhead lights of the Kaljian's apothecarian. His armour had been cut away, and the flesh inside was black, like overcooked meat. Jochi stood beside Sangjai, who rubbed his chin.
Pozhenoid's gone,
Sangdry said with regret. The heat. How did he die?
You can see for yourself, said Sangdry,
moving up towards the warrior's neck and parting the flaking folds with gloved hands.
A single blade thrust down to the spine. He was held in place while they did it.
Shiban leaned on his hands.
Ever seen an orc make a wound like that?
I do not know. Do they make wounds a certain way?
You have seen the way they fight, said Jochi. They mutilate what they kill.
Perhaps they did not have the chance, said Sangdry.
They had plenty of time, said Shiban. That is not the issue.
Sangdry looked back at the corpse. He studied it long and hard. He bent over and stared at the wound again. Shiban heard a faint whine as his augmetic left eye adjusted focus. Eventually, Sangdry straightened.
It could have been Hain. I have seen them use a blade well enough. But yes, perhaps unlikely.
What then?
Sangdry looked at him evenly.
You want my guess?
Say it, hissed Jochi impatiently.
This is a long knife cut. A legionary blade. They knew where to angle it. It was done quickly, and they trusted the lava to hide it.
Shiban nodded. He felt vaguely nauseous.
Anything else?
Sangdry shook his head.
Legionary blade, murmured Jochi, appalled. They were fighting among themselves. Who knows? Said Shiban. There was nothing on Femus but greenskins, Jochi went on, getting increasingly agitated. Greenskins and us! Did they go mad? Now that's enough. How many died this way?
Enough!
Shiban snapped. He pushed away from the table, his mind crowded with thoughts. Femus IV had taken a long time to pacify, far longer than it should have. The expedition fleet commanders had put it down to the hostile terrain, but Shiban had seen the campaign logs prior to his transfer, complaining of higher casualties than expected, poor communications, regular setbacks.
They were fighting amongst themselves.
Hard to believe. Tensions always existed between the Brotherhoods. He'd experienced them himself, but not to that extent. Never to that extent.
This cannot be ignored, he said at last. I am going back down.
The cleansing is over, said Sangdry doubtfully. We have our recall orders. The Khagan will move the fleet soon.
Comms have been bad for months, said Shiban, smiling bleakly. If we are slow in answering, he will understand.
You will not solve this, said Sangdry. Not on Femus.
Shiban started to walk away.
You have to start somewhere, he said.